kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Cole Martin, you're here as well. How are you doing?
I'm alive. I'd say I'm alive and kicking, but I'm old and I have arthritis, so I'm not really kicking, but I am alive.
Yeah, I'm fat. I don't kick either.
I'm also fat, so I've got just all kinds of strikes against me.
Old, fat, broken, dying, can't kick. But
I am alive.
You know what I can do? I could eat Taco Bell nacho fries on this show. Oh, they're so good. They're so good. It's like, what, like 2 out of 3 weeks that I'm eating Taco Bell during the show?
Nice.
And I don't even like Taco Bell. That's the best part. I don't give a shit about Taco Bell, but they're fries. Goddamn. Anyway, also here, you probably heard him. Carnage, Scott Smith, you're back. How are you doing?
What's up? How's it going, guys? Pretty good.
You and your awful puns are here again.
No Taco Bell, though, so, you know, not as good as you, but all right.
You're not allowed to have nacho fries because you make bad puns.
From that other episode with little triangle nacho Dorito Locos. Yeah, we need some of those. It always comes back to Taco
that
Bell.
So hard.
You pretty much already set us up for Taco Bell talk the whole show. So you're gonna add some. I'm gonna have to add some Taco Bell puns. And
I just really want to see like Doritos Loco Little Triangle now.
Doritos Loco Little Triangle. About it.
That would be amazing. But
this episode not sponsored by Taco Bell.
I keep making
puns, and you guys are talking over me, and it doesn't fucking matter.
I'm so distracted by Carnage's puns.
I know, because his are bad and mine are actually good.
Are you sure you're not distracted by my buns? At least I'm not on video.
True, I'm the only idiot who does video.
Carnage told us all he's not wearing pants.
Maybe I record the podcast while naked. You never know.
Hey, you do what you got to do, man. But
I have recorded pants.
Hey, in your tweet you said I don't know where my pants are, so you know.
I forgot I have that for the restream, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
How fitting. No pun intended.
I forget what I wrote for that.
Yeah, I went there.
What does it say? Remind me.
I just tweeted it, so too late. I just closed it.
You bastard.
It says that it may or may not be accurate and you don't know where your pants are.
There you go.
And I Someone's remember that. Attention. Carnage just tweeted it and doesn't know what it fucking says.
I closed Twitter already. It's too hard to open more windows. Ago. I'm not a multitasker. Well, sort of. When I want to be.
But
the only
multitasker
that gets him one achievement per game.
Yes, Adam. Chat. A punishing conversation. By the way, you haven't realized, but Adam is a pretty damn good pun master as well. So you guys are screwed this episode.
Well, luckily it's just the three of us. We don't have a guest to talk over this episode. but in the chat, Vertically Impaired asked, is anyone going to PAX East this year? Are you guys going at all?
Are you going to send me?
No.
Okay.
There's your answer. Yeah, I always wanted to go, but it always coincides with either college or work. So I don't know. Maybe one of these years I'll just have to say fuck it and do it. But forget all real life, responsibilities.
I really, really want to go.
Because I've never done the convention thing, but I'm curious, like, how disabled friendly are they?
Most of them are really disabled friendly.
Yeah. Because I use a cane under a lot of circumstances, but for something like that, I would have to use a wheelchair.
Oh, yeah.
And I was always like, I have no idea if I could even get, all I've ever seen are like the pictures where it's packed like hell. And all I can imagine is poor D trying to push my wheelchair.
You mean it's packed like hell.
Fuck you.
Joe is trying to cover up that laugh with a cough. I know you.
I think he choked on his nacho fry. You made him waste one.
Oh no.
Oh God. Yeah, I know MAGFest, like that takes place in a hotel where they have elevators. So if you have wheelchairs, you're on that.
Yeah.
Even like the concert hall. Even like the concert hall at MAGFest, they had an area sectioned off for disabled people with chairs there and wheelchair room. So I would imagine PAX is also very friendly.
Yeah, you would think so, especially isn't PAX like way bigger than MAGFest? I mean,
yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Now, I would love to do PAX East. I've been wanting to do it for years, but it's always a money thing because I do MAGFest. Part of me, like, I want to do PAX East, and I want to sometime in my life do E3. And I think the show is at the point where I could at least get a press pass in to one of these events. The big problem would be, you know, affording
literally everything else.
Thankfully, I'm decently
even at
Boston.
Sorry.
From what I heard, though, I mean, E3 would be cool to go to just for the show, but like to actually play shit, it would take forever to, you know, stand online for some of those big games. From what I heard, it's like more fun to be at PAX than obviously to E3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but for the experience, I guess it'd be cool.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to stand in line. I'd get to sit in line. Now what?
Yep.
See, I would want to go to like grow the show and talk to developers and be like, hey, my shit's legit. But with me, like if I'm going to go, I need to find someone that I'm going to room with. And I would really, really, really like to have someone there to like tag team with me on talking with developers and everything else instead of just everything by myself.
Exactly.
So who knows? I would love to do it though. I think it's what, April this year?
Not even sure.
Yeah, I think so. It's like 45 days away or something like that from when we're recording.
Is it probably already sold out? I mean, I haven't looked even because
no clue.
I don't know.
They go quick.
Well, Vertically Impaired's gone, so hey, you need a roomie? Nice. That'd be fun. But there is plenty of news to go over this week. Just because we don't have a guest doesn't mean we don't have a show, thankfully. Let's see. I think the biggest news of the week is that THQ bought Deep Silver.
Oh shit. I did not know that.
Yeah. You didn't hear that?
Holy fuck.
I've been pretty busy this week. I haven't kept up on everything on Twitter.
Yeah.
Where all the stuff goes down.
Very early Wednesday morning, like middle of the night, very early news came out that THQ Nordic entered into an agreement with Koch Media or Koch Media, Koch, whatever.
Yeah, I believe Media. It's pronounced Koch.
Well, I've heard that same name pronounced different ways. Like, I have a friend who has the last name. I was like, oh, is it Coke? And they're like, no, it's Cook. Fuck you, whatever. So
I think he's pulling your leg, Joe.
Well, Coke Media is going to be selling their THQ Nordic is going to be purchasing the entire company, which includes Deep Silver, as well as IP like Saints Row Homefront, Dead Island, Metro. And if you remember,
I'm pretty excited about this.
Some of those were formerly THQ properties.
Yeah. Homefront specifically, I remember being one. I believe Dead Island was as well.
Yeah, but so THQ, the funny thing is, like, episode 1 or episode 0, the big thing that we talked about was, oh, THQ shut down. And now, not only is THQ, you know, they shut down, Nordic Games bought some of the properties, Deep Silver bought some of the properties, a bunch of different companies bought up properties, and now it seems like Nordic is doing everything they can to just reunite THQ back to what it was.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is pretty
neat. I think it's a pretty admirable effort, though, that they're trying to go back and get the properties that did well for them in the past.
Yeah.
And get them back.
Hmm. Now, the price for the whole acquisition is 121 million euro, which is around 150 million U.S. dollars.
Damn.
That seems pretty cheap when you consider some of the titles that were involved.
I don't know. I guess it was enough.
I mean, I know like Homefront didn't do well and Dead Island is kind of just hanging in the balance, but it still just seems like a really low price just for those two alone. And then you throw in Saints Row and stuff as well.
Like Agents of Mayhem and stuff. That
one. I would assume that they're also taking on whatever debt Koch Media had as well.
That could balance it out.
Yeah.
think Agents of Mayhem was decent from what some, you know, people were saying about it, but not like
people even loved it or hated it.
Yeah, it wasn't like
a, I loved Agents of Mayhem. It was pretty much like what I was hoping it would be. It would have been nice to have online play, but yeah, I knew going in it wouldn't.
That was the big gripe for me.
I temper my expectations based on the information I'm given and not what I hope it would be.
I also think some people were looking at it as like, oh, you know, is it like another Saints Row? And they were looking for that, but it's something a little different, which was cool. You know, kind of strayed away from, I think it was more like Overwatch in some ways, like a single player Overwatch in a sense, because, you know, the different abilities and characters.
No.
Yeah.
But, yep.
But some other news, we got two new additions to the Xbox backward compatibility program this week, and I think they were two pretty big games with the original Prey, neat game, and then I think the big one, Mafia 2.
Oh, yeah, that was a game with gold a while back, but I guess that was before they made the announcement that everything was back compat game with gold.
And even better, both games are on sale this week, so if you don't have either of them, get them while they're cheap.
Yeah, dude, Prey was awesome. I played that back in the day on 360. And funny enough, the Prey that's on the One, I know it's totally different. I never got into that one from what I saw. But the old Prey was a really cool first-person shooter with a lot more action. I mean, I'm comparing it to the new one again. I shouldn't, because it's totally different. But yeah, that one had like online good multiplayer when it was. I don't know if it's going to be, maybe the servers will be back lively again, but... really cool.
Who
game.
Knows if it's anything like, you know, Army of Two? No.
Yeah.
It's a bummer that they'll bring back games as part of the backward compatibility program and they'll have dead servers. I think that sucks.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, reactivate the servers, even if it's just like, hey, we're going to reactivate them for 6 months. Play it now.
Yeah. I think we mentioned this before, but it's like so annoying when we see Major Nelson or someone tweet that picture, they're promoting the games with gold. Oh, this much, 3,000 something gamer score. No, bullshit. It's like this much less. It's like 2,000 something because it has glitched achievements or the fucking servers are discontinued. So it's not even. Yeah, they should at least do something about. I think they can still do something about it if they wanted to, but oh well, too much work.
I wonder if it's not a funding issue because servers aren't cheap.
True. But even if it was a temporary thing, just because they're actively promoting this game because hey, it's a new addition to this program, especially something where it's part of Games with Gold, because that's big time promoting. That hey, this is a, this bigger, is a free game.
Yeah,
that's a bigger issue to me.
Yeah,
I can understand a standard backward compatible title not having online reactivate. But if your game's with gold, fucking turn the servers on. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it might even make people that don't have gold or other people buy it later on or something. It might coerce them. They're like, oh, you're playing this online. You know, your friends are playing whatever. But
Let's see. What other news? I don't think you guys are going to care about this, but I'm fucking excited. Just today, Harmonix unveiled some information on their new update coming to Rock Band 4. It is planned for a release as early as next week, depending on certification with Sony and Microsoft. They're planning for Wednesday, and it has a lot of updates and additions. Online quick play is getting a major overhaul. You can browse active sessions and see details that define matching DLC play style, etc. So no longer are you just stuck playing with friends who invite you. You can look at games and see who's playing and just join random people. Yay. It's nice. It's like it's the year 2010 again. It's crazy.
That's cool.
You can create public or private sessions with parameters like player skill, song totals, stuff like that. Drop in online play, which a lot of people are excited about. The way it works now is there's a green room that everyone joins, and then you say you're ready, and you go to the song list. Everybody picks a song, and then you play. Now, if people are already playing a song, you could just jump in. As long as you own the DLC, you can just jump in the middle of their set list and play, as long as you own them.
Nice.
In addition, previously, you could only have a maximum of a 4-song set list, because 4 people playing, 1 person gets 1 song. Now, they're having choice of 4, 8, or 24 song set lists.
Wow.
So now people don't have to go back to the green or back to the song list every fucking 15 minutes and pick new songs. So I'm excited about that. They're going to have pre-built messages for online communication, kind of like just quick emote stuff like in Rocket League, stuff like that. Other improvements, they have improved character animations, new loading screen tips, new library song filters, including a way, even online, you could filter out just the Rivals Challenge songs. And the biggest thing for most people is the strum lanes in the game work, which is amazing. If you don't know what the strum lanes are, it's something that they added with the Rivals expansion, where sections that had a lot of fast strumming areas, you could, they would put like a little guard around it. So as long as you were just strumming as at least as many notes that were there, you could go as fast as you want. But as long as you were strumming to match those notes, you got it. You were given the credit for it. The problem was near the end, everybody would, it would just fuck up. They didn't work right. And now they do, which, yay.
Nice.
How long did that take to make happen?
Let's see. Which part? The lanes or just the update?
The lanes. Like, how long have they been broken?
Probably since Rock Band 4 launched.
Wow.
It's been a long time. So a lot of people are happy about
this.
This
is like a whole rehaul, kind of like a whole.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
They are doing a lot. They've been bringing back old DLC. So if you know, there's a lot of songs that if you purchased on the Xbox 360, you know, they may have been delisted and not for sale anymore. And now they can be, you know, they're not for sale anymore, but the people who already own them can download them and play them in Rock Band 4.
That's awesome. And yeah. I want to add something that's a really cool also about it, in my opinion, like from a consumer, you know, point of view, it's really fair to the consumer because you'd think if they were greedy bastards, they would like make a whole new, Rock Band, the next one, you know, make you buy a whole new game. But everything is just being updated for free. Right. So yeah,
they could have done what Activision did with Guitar Hero Live in all of the content you owned on the 360 or the PS3.
Wow.
Doesn't matter.
That's at least
none of it.
Kudos to Harmonix then. That's cool.
Yeah, Harmonix, they get a lot of shit for, you know, oh well, there's only like two songs a week, or you know, there's a lot of pop bullshit. They have busted their ass to bring thousands of songs from last gen to current gen with no added charge.
Yeah, they want to make everyone happy, get as much variety and
I only want Rock Band because there's Incubus DLC.
I knew that was coming.
I love Incubus.
Well, there you go. Pick it up.
I do too.
Pick it up. The hardest thing right now is that people are having trouble buying the game because, you know, when Rock Band 4 first released, it was published by Mad Catz, who don't exist anymore. Well, they kind of do, but they were brought back, but like all PC shit. After Mad Catz fell apart and they ended up partnering with PDP, who re-released it with Rock Band Rivals, the online expansion, and then we haven't seen anything since. People thought maybe for the past Christmas we would have seen some new bundles out in stores. Haven't seen anything. It is hard as hell to find Rock Band instruments for current consoles anymore. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it really is. My kids, I'm not musically inclined in any way, but my kids are for somehow, I don't know how that happened, but they love that shit. And like number one had seen Rock Band on YouTube and she was like, that's the coolest thing. And I'm going, yeah, good luck because I've looked.
Yeah.
I can't find that shit.
Just to show you how crazy these bundles are, the Rock Band Rivals Wireless Fender Guitar Bundle on Amazon for Xbox One, $175.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
This was like an $80 bundle.
I remember seeing like the guitar on GameStop for like $5 and I called them and they were like, oh, we don't get those. And I was like, then why is it there? It even gave me the option to put it on hold. He's like, we're not going to ever get that. And I was like,
if there was an option to pick up in store, they had it and either someone shrinked out or someone is just keeping it.
Yeah, it said it just gave me the option to put it on hold. They did that with on the website with the DS game too. The girls have one of the DSIs, and I've never upgraded them because I'm a terrible parent. And but there was a Monster High game, that number two has been hollering for. And so I got on GameStop. It was like, oh, it's $4.99. You can put it on hold. I put it on hold, and I go in there. I'm like, hi, I'm ready to pick up my game. I got an email. It was ready. And they're like, we don't have DS games.
What?
They were full of shit. If they said it was ready, someone at that store got the game, set it aside, and filled out that, like, yes, the game is ready. That's done manually. So whoever told you that was full of shit.
Yeah. And then I was like, well, but it said it was ready, and that's a Christmas gift. And I was kind of, we don't have it. The fuck is wrong with you people?
You're a
Our GameStop is horrible.
Wow.
This is literally, when I say a hole in the wall, it's a little, it's like between a nail salon and a Subway.
Yeah. You know what? For better or worse, I think GameStops are slowly diminishing, or quickly, with Game Pass going on and all the other digital shit that, you know, it's going to be gone soon anyway.
No. But if you think $175 for a guitar bundle is crazy, Amazon, they have the Rock Band Rivals band kit with the game, the guitar, drum kit, and a microphone. Xbox One, the cheapest, $476.
Fuck.
This was like a bundle.
The sellout bundle.
This was a bundle that GameStop sold brand new for $100.
Yeah.
$100.
They're like, oh, this is a rare antique. Shit, you better get this for fucking almost like an Xbox One X price.
Yeah. $500 to get a Rock Band band kit. So if you could go online, if you know any GameStops that have a band kit, because a couple of them still do out there, get it now. Because there's a chance they might not re-release the game again.
Yeah.
Just because of the cost of manufacturing everything, shipping all the boxes, having them in stores, taking up space. A lot of stores don't want to stock a whole shitload of Rock Band kits anymore across multiple consoles with multiple iterations.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep track of.
If you are interested
for the Switch,
I don't think it'll ever come to the Switch. And a big reason, I know when Josh Harrison came on the one time, he mentioned that a big issue there is, content entitlements, songs that you've purchased on the Wii. Was Rock Band on Wii U? I don't think so. But songs that you already owned, Nintendo doesn't have a way to grant those entitlements anymore.
Ah.
And that's a big thing keeping Rock Band off the Switch.
Oh, I see.
No.
Licensing shit.
And they don't want to fuck over the owners and be like, oh yeah, well, you can have the game again, but all those songs that you bought years ago, got to buy them all over again. That would suck.
Yep.
And we're already kind of facing that because Rock Band Network is officially, I think, pretty much gone right now. It was built on the whole XNA framework with Microsoft, and that's been removed. And from what I'm seeing online, like, all the songs are pretty much gone from PSN, from the Wii Shop, from Xbox. So Rock Band Network is gone, and Harmonix has already confirmed we will never see those entitlements brought over to current gen. There's a chance that they might get some of the songs from Rock Band Network, relicense them, and resell them. But if you owned them, they're gone.
Yeah.
Not even worth it then.
Yeah. I mean, if you still have them downloaded on your 360 or PS3 or Wii, you could obviously still play them. But there's even a chance that, like, if you deleted them, you can't re-download them, which would suck.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, because remember that having happened with a couple, not many, but it happened with a few XBLA games on 360. Like, if you delete the full game, even if it was delisted and you owned it, there are a couple that actually don't let you download it anymore.
Yeah, that sucks.
I think there's a Mortal Kombat game that we own that I've always been like, don't, whatever you do, don't delete that game, because it's delisted and you can't re-download it anymore.
No. But yeah, Rock Band getting updates. that kind of went off on a tangent.
Of course, Joe's going to talk about Rock Band for a fucking hour.
God damn right, it's my show. You're not done yet.
Let's go. You're a Rock Band master.
How many achievements do you have in Rock Band, Carnage?
Me? Oh man, I probably just like bean dived it, right?
Completion. Come on, I've got the Rock Band 4 completion. I'm excited about that. I'm proud of that one.
I honestly know. I played a lot more Guitar Hero back in the day. I played a little Rock Band 1 and 2, I think, with my friends, but just for fun more. It wasn't really about trying to get all the achievements, because let's be honest, I suck at a lot of those rhythm games. I'm not going to lie. So
Oh, man. Yeah. Let's see. What other news? If you still haven't jumped on Splatoon 2 on the Switch, Nintendo is releasing a starter edition of the game on March 16th, which includes the game, a 100-page strategy guide, and some goddamn stickers, all for the same $59.99 price. So if you didn't get it yet, wait a month. Nintendo also announced that Pearl and Marina from Splatoon 2 are getting their own Amiibo 2-pack later this year as well. So, yay, more Amiibo. New Monster Hunter World is now officially the fastest selling game in Capcom history. It shipped over 5 million units in the first 3 days after launch. They say that it's apparently over 6 million now. It is also the top paid game on PSN, expected, and the top paid game on Xbox, beating out PUBG.
That is huge.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So if that's not a sign that Xbox gamers will accept good Japanese action role-playing games, what the fuck? Bring us more. We are hungry for Japanese titles on the Xbox. Monster Hunter World should be proof. As long as it's good, we want it.
Yeah, also, I know, I haven't played it, but I know it's apparently a really good co-op, on a four-player co-op online game.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's four-player or more. I'm not sure.
If Vertically Impaired's still hanging out in the Twitch chat, I know he's been playing that quite a bit. So,
nice.
Some more Capcom information. There are rumors out there that with Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite confirmed to not be part of the Capcom Pro Tour, the current speculation and some insider talk is that Infinite will be pulled from sale later this year and delisted as part of Disney wanting to distance itself from underperforming Marvel games like Marvel Heroes Omega.
Oh, that's a shame. I like that one.
Yeah. If only Disney weren't petty bitches who refused to allow X-Men in Marvel versus Capcom Infinite, maybe it would have sold better.
I know. What the fuck are they looking for? Like, jeez.
No one wanted like the Inhumans in it. We wanted Wolverine. We wanted Wolverine, Storm, Magneto, Gambit. Like, give us actual X-Men. They could potentially still save the game with a fucking X-Men DLC pack.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that means they gotta stop being petty bitches. Another rumor, Capcom rumor, is that Devil May Cry 5 might be announced at E3, and the current talk is that the game is going to be fully funded by Sony and a lifetime PS4 exclusive.
No.
Lifetime PS. Oh, shit.
Fucking no.
They always try to scare you. They say maybe a lifetime exclusive, so there's still a chance.
Well, no, if it's fully funded by Sony, it will be.
Oh, yeah. If it's fully fun, if it goes through. Yeah.
I don't but see it happening, though.
Yeah, still a rumor. You know, there was talk for the longest time that Marvel versus Capcom was going to be a PlayStation exclusive. Tekken was going to be a PlayStation exclusive. Ace Combat was going to be a PlayStation exclusive, and they're not. So
I would think if they were going to do something like that, they wouldn't even bother releasing the HD collection on Xbox or anything. They'd just be like pouring all
why not?
Of their
They're allowed to release that one on Xbox.
Yeah, but if they're trying to release it for the sake of drumming up hype, what's the point of drumming it up to an audience who isn't even going to be able to access
the new
game unless they buy a whole other console?
To be fair, they're not releasing the collection to hype up Devil May Cry 5 because Devil May Cry 5 officially doesn't exist yet.
Well, I mean, if that's the point of it, and that's where the rumor is coming from. Everybody's like, oh, the HD collection is coming, so they must be trying to hype up a new Devil May Cry. And I hope like hell they are, because if anybody knows me, Devil May Cry is my number one most favorite game ever. My fucking dog is named Dante. I love Devil May Cry.
I can't wait to see all the people getting upset about Sony buying exclusives, except, oh wait, nobody gets mad at Sony because the game industry is filled with hypocrites and double standards. Yay!
I mean, if it was... Exactly. If there's a new Devil May Cry and it is Sony exclusive, I'll be pretty disappointed, because that's
one
eternal
one year.
Will cry.
I bitch about it. Yeah, I will cry.
Eternal will cry.
One year
eternal may cry.
That's what
I cried. I fucked up my own pun, damn it. But no one noticed until I said it.
But yeah, a one year exclusive on Tomb Raider is the worst thing in the world to happen to video gaming. A lifetime exclusive of Street Fighter V on PlayStation. Oh, well, that just makes sense because it has a install base and blah, 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 blah. Sony helped.
Are Capcom the developers for Street Fighter V?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I think that, and it bombed like fuck when they did that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's doing well now, like, but at launch,
fall into that trap again, though.
I don't know. We'll see. You never know. And speaking of Sony exclusive stuff, another rumor is going around that Activision is going to be releasing a Spyro trilogy this year of the original three games. The rumor makes mention that it would be a 1 year exclusive on PS4, supposedly similar to the Crash trilogy, which has also been rumored to appear on other platforms in the coming months. There's never been any kind of official statement on the exclusivity of Crash. It's just been assumed stuff. But if this rumor is saying a 1 year exclusive similar to Crash, that might finally be a confirmation. I know there were rumors that the Crash trilogy would show up on the Switch and PC later this year. Those two were explicitly mentioned. But I think it would be silly to not release it on Xbox, given the size of the Crash IP, unless Sony specifically paid Activision to not release on Xbox, which wouldn't surprise me.
That's true. Right. That is one of their oldest, most popular franchises, too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see Sony paying, because they've done it to indies, where they would pay specifically not for their gamers to have a new exclusive title to play. They do it specifically to prevent it from appearing on Xbox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, Sony, I would stop it.
Hope if there is a Spyro game that it comes to Xbox, because I love Spyro.
Call of Spyro is up there on my remastered list.
Not as high as Devil May Cry, but I definitely do love me some Spyro.
No. I really hope Sony stops with this buying exclusive bullshit, because it has done nothing but piss people off.
They just want to be dicks.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I used to love PlayStation. For the longest time, I loved PlayStation. I was hardcore PlayStation fan. Like, back when the original Xbox launched, I refused to buy it because I thought Microsoft didn't have a place in the video game console industry. Like, stick to PCs.
And you were a changed man.
And now it's pretty much completely flip-flopped. I own the original Xbox. I bought it just for, like, a couple of the Sega exclusives. The Xbox 360 kind of turned me around, because I really enjoyed that, and I thought the PS3 was fucking awful, especially at the $600 price tag. PS4 has just done nothing but to reaffirm how much I am growing tired of Sony.
We actually bought an original Xbox, and we had it for like a week, and my husband turned back around. We bought it off eBay. We had it about a week, and he turned around and sold it back on eBay a week later. Because he was just, like, not a fan of it at all. And he'd been diehard PlayStation up until that time. I didn't even get a chance to touch it. I didn't even get to play it. And then I remember we got a 360 because of the price difference, basically. It was the cheaper one, and so that's what we got. And we've been Xbox ever since. Like, I can't imagine not playing on my Xbox.
No. Dark Meek is saying, I was a PlayStation fan until the PS3 came out and it wasn't backward compatible. And I was like, well, fuck it. That's the case. Why not get a 360? The PS3 was backward compatible. The first couple of models played PS1 and PS2 games, started off with hardware emulation. And then with the 20 and 60 gig were hardware emulation. Then the 40 gig and the 80 gig, I believe, were software emulation. And then they just dropped PS2 completely. But fun fact, all PS3s will play PS1 games. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize that. So that's nifty, at least. But that's the news I got. Any other news y'all want to talk about?
Just a little tidbit. I think you tweeted about it earlier, Joe, from X-Morph Defense, that indie game. They're coming out with that DLC, right?
March 26th, I believe. They're going to have new DLC coming out. XOR Studios is going to be releasing it on all the platforms, Xbox, PlayStation, Steam. Only $5. So that's cool.
And the developer was actually telling me that suiting all achievement whores like myself and many of you guys, there will be new gamer score. And the cool part he actually mentioned to me is that the title update will have like a survival mode for free. So all the achievements, the new achievements and gamer score can be got for free in the title update. And then the DLC, that's $5, as you mentioned, will be the new campaign levels, which don't have achievements.
I think you said 10 stages are going to be part of that for $5.
I'm not. not sure, but either way, yeah, twin stick shooter tower defense game, really, really unique. I love that one.
$5. So good, good to see something come out that cheap, especially when, you know, we're starting to see some companies raising. That's something we never covered on the show. 2 weeks ago, we reviewed the most recent Artifacts Mundi game on Xbox One, and we said that the price was $9.99. Because when I took my notes and I checked everything, the game was priced at $9.99. Between us recording and the episode releasing, it increased to $14.99, which is in line with their recent Steam releases being $14.99 instead of $9.99. You know, game prices are going up. They do a lot of work with porting games over fairly regularly. I can understand them wanting to price them at $14.99. Then they priced all of their games at $14.99, including games that have been out for years.
I could not support that shit. That's just, I tweeted about it too. I was like, as much as I love ID at Xbox games and all that stuff in the community, it's just a shitty move for that company, Artifacts Money, to do it. Yes.
Fuck you.
So I did tweet that. I tweeted that fucking pun, remember? And yeah, but no, for real though, that is a shitty move. I mean, I could understand for the new games, but for old ones, for them to do that, that's...
No, I get why people are upset about it.
That's been the general consensus, is people can understand new games being priced at $15, but to take older games, some years old, and raise them from $10 to $15 is shitty. There's no other way to put it.
I think the insult to injury there, too, is that some of these games weren't just PC ports. They were mobile ports. Mm-hmm. And you can get, I have them, you can get them on Amazon Underground apps for free. And then you look at it on Xbox and it's the exact same thing and it's $15.
No.
That's not cool.
I don't know. I think the price of everything will eventually go up on Steam. I think it will. Mm-hmm. Because all their newer games are coming out at $15 as well on Steam.
Yeah. Like, I don't mind the new ones coming out. Okay, the development isn't free.
Yeah.
It costs. Even porting does. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to market the exact same game on iOS or Android for $2.99 and then turn around and say, okay, well, you're on a different device, so it's going to be, what, 8 times higher.
No.
You know? It's like, no.
Yeah.
That's too much.
And the other part of it, too, it's just like the porting part, because the actual game itself, a lot of them are already on Steam. Like, there's a shitload more on Steam. They're just slowly taking a while to port them over and, you know, say, oh, yeah, this one's more expensive now. I don't know.
Well, I contacted Artifacts. I know that people were all up in arms about it, and I figured I wanted to contact them directly, figure out what's going on. I heard back, and I'm just going to read the email directly so I don't twist any of their words. Said, hey, Joe, the best statement in this situation is the comment posted on the True Achievements discussion by our dev, Jarek, who is responsible for our console releases. He then linked me to it. It was tucked on like the 7th or 8th page of all the discussion on there, so I'm sure a lot of people missed this. And this is what it says. Hi, folks. Artifacts Mundi here. I just wanted to address some of the topics that have been discussed in the article and in the comment section here, so let's start. The price increase was planned both on Xbox One and PS4. Yes, we've increased the price for new and already released titles. We've changed the price from $9.99 to $14.99. On Xbox One, we've also adjusted prices in some local currencies to better reflect local price point, but we noticed in some countries this needs to be readjusted. I'm thinking of Brazil and Canada here. On PS4, we don't have so much flexibility in adjusting prices per country. We're looking at what the community is saying. You can always reach us via support mail and social channels. Regarding the quote sale on bundles that happen overnight, this change is permanent, not just a sale that happened now. We want to better communicate the benefits of buying packs of 2, 3 or more games. So now is the strike through and text saying how much you're saving over the regular price of $14.99. We would like to make purchasing our games more appealing for new players, and the discount is 20, 25, or 30% depending on the number of games in the bundle. You're probably waiting for answer for the most important question. Why have we increased the prices of previously released titles? The easy answer is we just wanted to be consistent with pricing across all our series and bundles. We believe, for example, that Nightmares from the Deep 2 is as good as Nightmares from the Deep 3, Even though it was released a while ago, we're leaving this to our fans and gamers to decide if they want to spend this amount of money. We still offer free trial with up to 1 hour of gameplay so you can make up your mind and buy it or not. If some of you don't want to spend $15 on our game, we're okay with it. If you prefer to wait for sale in the future, we're okay with that too. We understand that there may be some hard feelings with regards to these changes, but we don't think calling passionate people that are working each day for 6 to 8 weeks per game to release them on consoles names is a fair and sensible way of discussing this issue. Without going into too many details, but from the price you see in the store, we need to pay Microsoft and Sony their part, pay the taxes, pay for age rating, and in some situations, we're earning less than 50% from the sticker price. And there's a U.S. dollar to Polish zloty. Is that the currency over there? The Polish zloty? Exchange rate that plunged over the last year significantly, but I understand this is not the user's thing to worry about this. If you have more questions, I'm open to discussions here. You could always reach us at email, contact@artifexmundi.com, twitter.com/artifexmundi, or directly twitter.com/forestall_PL. So that is their statement. I can understand where they're coming from in not wanting their older games to feel, quote, cheaper or less valuable. It's still a shitty thing to do, I think. I don't agree with it.
Especially
I'm
since
a little more forgiving because of the whole, like, I didn't realize there was an issue with the conversion and, like, the price bottoming out. I could see where that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that they're definitely justified in what they're doing because, first off, it's their company and their games. They could kind of do what the fuck they want. And they're already saying, you know, you don't have to like it. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to buy the games. And we understand that. We're okay if you don't buy our games or if you wait for sales. This is why we did it. This is why we had to do it.
I kind of see it. I don't know.
Because it mentioned the bundles, though, I wonder if maybe the creation of the bundles wasn't because they knew that they were going to have to do that, and it was some kind of way to, like, ease the pain a little bit.
Maybe.
Because it was odd to me. I was like, wow, there just suddenly every Artifex Monday game is in a bundle with its group, and it was just kind of like, I was caught by it. I was like, that is quite a big undertaking there. And then now it kind of makes a little more sense.
A little bit. But you know what also kind of bugs me is that if they're saying each of these games is like almost the same, you know, same or better than the previous one, like the, you were talking about the second Nightmare from the Deep and the third, he was saying it's like not any, you know, better or worse or something like that. But these games have been ported to the Xbox One. I'm looking on True Achievements right now, and it looks like there's like 14 or 15 of them. That have come out since the beginning of, I think, around 2016. This one, Clockwork Tales, came out in January 2016. So it's like they've been doing this shit for a while now. It's just, are they thinking in a way like, we're not getting enough profit, so now we're going to do this? Like, that's what it makes me wonder. I don't know.
No. I don't know. I can definitely see both sides of the argument here.
I could see. True. Yeah.
I don't know. Dark Mika is saying older games are less valuable, like legitimately newer games have newer tech and such. But again, they're trying to, like, no matter what the tech is there, no matter what the time was involved, they're trying to make all their games equal instead of saying, this game is more expensive, so you must have this one. Or this game is cheaper, so it's not worth owning.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand their side of things.
That's a legitimate reason to want... up until this point, all their games have, well, even when we did the interview or the review, we were like, they're always $10. So, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a thing that you see, you know, one of those point and click games and you see that it's an Artifex Monday and you kind of just expect it to be a certain series of things. And so I can understand them wanting to keep that uniformity.
Yeah. Mm. It's like even when Dark Mika covered some of the more recent Steam Artifex games, when they first switched the price over to $14.99 for the new stuff on Steam, we didn't know that was going to be like a from now on. So she would write in a review and be like, for $10, it's worth it. I'm like, it's not $10 anymore. So we, I'd be like, do you have an update on this? And we would go back to it. One of the reviews I remember was like, if it's $10 or if it's $15, it's still worth getting. And, you know, they're 15. Artifex games are 15 now. And I can understand the new ones being 15 from now on. I'm still not a fan of the old ones getting increased. Again, I understand why. I don't agree with it. So, that's all the news I got. Anything else?
I think that pretty much covers it.
Cool. Well, we do have some reviews to handle. Are y'all ready to talk video games?
Hells yeah.
I mean, we've only been for how long now?
Specific video games.
Yeah, we forgot to talk about Taco Bell again. Oh, well.
They're fucking nacho
we're
fries,
lose
man.
Guys.
Those nacho fries. Hot damn. Anyway, first game that we're going to review tonight is called Dandara, developed by Long Hat House, published by Raw Fury, released February 6th on Xbox One, Switch, Steam, Mobile, and PS4 for $11.99. The world of Salt hangs on the brink of collapse. The citizens, once free spirits, now stand oppressed and isolated, but not all is lost. Far out of this aether of fear arises a heroine, a ray of hope. Her name is Dandara. Awaken Dandara to bring the freedom and balance to this directionless world. This game is really, really crazy. It's pretty much a Metroidvania-style game without walking.
Mm-hmm.
Cole, I know you played this one. What did you think of this one?
I really liked the concept of how you move in this platformer. They shook things up with the whole, everything's directionless and you don't necessarily like walk or jump. With classic platformers, you move to the right or left or whatever direction you got to go. And then you jump diagonally. But with Dandara, you actually warp from point to point. And there are certain ledges in the game that are covered in salt. And you can only warp to an area that has salt on it. And in addition to that, you have a limited length that you can travel in between.
No.
So you have to really think about how you're going to get Dandara from one aspect, from one side of a room to another. And because of the whole directionless aspect of it, the rooms like move as you move to change their direction.
Yeah, I honestly think the movement is going to be the biggest thing causing hesitation with people buying this game.
I think probably the best part of the game.
That's true from what
time.
I saw too. I played a little bit of it, but I know what you're talking about. It's unique movement.
I can see where people would be put off by it, but in reality, I think that's probably one of the most refined parts of the game as it is.
And to the game's credit, it's also really, really good at not screwing you over when you move somewhere. Like if you're holding in a certain direction and you're just hitting the button going back and forth, like it kind of knows, well, you're planning to go this way, so we'll just make sure that we're aiming you this way. It worked. Yeah. I thought
like
it worked really well.
It puts a little arrow. You have your little direction bar that, moves and shows you where you can go and how far, but the arrow shows you where you're actually going to land.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be pinpoint precise. You can flip through an area pretty quickly. Even it's built for speed running, no less. So you can just like flip your way through the boss, or not the bosses, but the enemies in each room, and never even have to fire if you don't want to. You can, if you get good enough with maneuvering the just Dandara herself, you can just zigzag into that out of enemies and never fire if you don't.
Please tell me there's no achievement for that, like the pacifism or something.
No, there are.
That would be cool, though. Yeah.
You're supposed to be able to beat the game in an hour and 17 minutes. That's the dev time.
Yeah, fuck that.
And I have 6 hours in the game where I didn't even like accomplish anything. I just was like back and forth, and that was my greatest flaw with the game, was just that. The whole directionless thing, it's wonderful, it's really creative, but as far as applying that to navigating the game, that's where shit kind of hit the fan.
it is so fucking easy to get lost in this game. It doesn't help that when you go from a room to room, like the camera will turn. Like it might turn 90 degrees or it might turn 180 degrees. It is constantly fucking with your perspective of where you are. They have a mini map that you could pull up and it shows you the room you're in. It doesn't show you your position in the room.
Yeah.
It just shows you the room you're in.
So you don't know which door you're near.
There's no option to change, like, no rotating or
nothing.
No.
That would be a nice addition.
the mini, there is no like mini map on your HUD either. You have to push the button to bring it up. You have to
open
and the map. Just have the map and it's static. It doesn't rotate with you, even though the rooms do.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to get lost. And I'm someone who's not that directionally challenged. Like when I go places, I know what I'm doing.
I'm directional. I can't find my way out of a wet paper bag with a flashlight, somebody holding my hand.
Eternal needs like a GPS to go around the block.
So when she tells me she spent 6 hours in the game, I'm thinking that she still hasn't made it to the first boss yet.
I'm just like, wait, I don't even know. But at the same time, at least when I'm playing it, I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But oh my God, when I walk past the room and I realize it's the same one I've been in 27 times already, I get so pissed. Yeah. And I just have to put down the controller and be like, you know what? I'm gonna go play something that's like, I need a point and click.
That does lead to another gripe I have with Dandara, is that it has this feeling of being an open world Metroidvania style thing, but it's still very gated off. It feels like you're constantly being led down a cattle chute that has like tiny little side roads that you could go like a foot down and then it's a dead end, so you have to turn around, except in the video game world it's like four rooms away, so you'll go what's this
and
way,
and it just loops you back,
or you get to something that I'm not meant to go this way yet, so it constantly just forces you to go down basically a straight path.
I see. So it's still linear, even though
It feels very linear despite the open world feel. Like once you experience some areas, you could do the whole Metroidvania thing of going back, re-exploring, find secrets you may have missed before.
Later in the game, though. Yeah,
but moving forward, it just feels a lot more linear than the game looks to be. And the backtracking has got to be one of the worst parts of the game in my eyes.
That's a shame.
Just because of the weird, unique movement style, the disorientating camera angle changes, and the just how easy it is to get lost in the game, it makes it tough to get around. And the fact that there's not even a fast travel option until much later in the game, getting around can be a big headache if if the camera changes angle the first time and you're like, oh fuck, I don't know what to do. You're going to be lost with this game.
No matter what you do, it feels like you're never quite sure of where you are or where you're going.
No.
You're always just like, okay, now what?
And I was actually really hyped for this one. To be fair, I haven't played it myself that much yet, as much as you guys. But do you guys remember that other indie game, Hopico? Remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah, that one was kind of like, the concept was similar. And I was thinking this game was going to be like that, where you can just dash to, different spots and stuff. But that was more of a fast paced action,
platformer and this style. Is action adventure, Metroidvania style.
Yeah. Thing. But I kind of wish they put that stuff into it and made it in a Metroidvania with that fast paced, precision aiming.
I'm actually glad it's not that fast paced, really? Because it's the game's fairly tough the way it is. If it were that fast paced, you would be fucked.
Oh, okay.
There are
you'd be lost.
There are checkpoints. There's checkpoints every so often scattered around, but they're really few and far between.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of Dark Souls references, because if you hit the checkpoint, I know.
Too hard for reviewers. It's the Dark Souls of whatever.
But in not because of difficulty, but because of where, like, if you die, you get thrown back to a checkpoint that's, could be fucking far and forever away if you haven't found a campfire that's close to where you were. Mm-hmm. And then when you die, there's like a spirit or a ghost, what have you, left where you died at. And you collect pleas of salt. That's your, and I say please, not like please give me, but please as in like Christ. So you collect pleas of salt, and that's your currency for the game. And you use that to buy extra health and stuff. But you can only buy it at campfires. Mm-hmm. So if you die, your salt gets left where you died. And you have to, hobble your happy ass all the way back to where you were to recollect your pleas.
If you die again, it's gone.
It's gone, because you can only have one ghost in the world at a time.
No.
So if you die again before you get to it, and you had like 8,000 pleas on you, they're all gone. Mm-hmm. Fuck you.
And,
you know?
And the game in traditional, like, I know the Surge had an achievement like this of carrying so much currency at once. If this one, it's like carrying like 8,000 salt at once.
I think there's even one for 20.
Yeah. And if you die and all that shit's gone, oh my God. Overall though, $12, I think it's cheap enough that it's definitely worth checking out. I would give this a recommend to try it, but it is definitely not for everyone. There's a lot of frustration in the game, but it's really, really good.
Yeah, it seems like
very niche. I do want to step out there and give it bonus points, though, for having a woman of color for its primary character. Mm-hmm. It's protagonist. Yeah. That is not something we see very often, and it's something that I've noticed some of the games coming out this year. It's a little more frequent, but it's still horribly underrepresented, so it was really good to at least see, you know, the world's fucked, but here's a really kick-ass black woman with her fro, and she's going to come and fix everything. And I was just like, every time she like popped up on the screen, I'm like, yes, she's going to kick all the ass.
Yeah,
so I give her bonus points for that. I give the whole game just get some bonus points for the fact that this was a nice change of pace to see a character like that.
Nice. Yeah. Well, next game to talk about is The Fall Part 2 Unbound, developed and published by Over the Moon. It released February 13th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $16.99. You are an AI that is broken free of your shackles. Now a human user from across the global network has attacked and infected you with an error redacted. Ooh. Make a new rule. Save yourself. Hunt them. End them. Do anything. Use anyone. Become unbound. The Fall Part 2 will break your protocols. Cole, tell me about this one.
I love this game.
All right, moving on.
I had so much fun with this because I had not played the first game in this series yet.
Oh, wow.
I bought it for $1.25 fucking forever ago. And it was just sitting in my backlog. And so when you're like, oh, do you want The Fall Part 2? I'm like, yeah. Because it'll make me play the first one.
The Fall of Eternal's Backlog.
God fucking damn it. So I played off the first one. Yep. Darn it.
Hush your fuss, Kafoor.
All right,
I played all through the first one. I played through the first one, and then I immediately jumped right into the second one. I was just so in love with the concept of Aerith as a character and just how she was moving through the world. I really had to just go. I needed to know what was going to happen further. The Fall Part 2 picks up right at the end. Spoiler alert, if you haven't played The Fall like me.
I don't care.
When we get to the end of the first game, Aerith discovers that she has been trying to protect a human that wasn't there. And so she's bent all these rules in her protocol, if you haven't played it. She's bent all these rules and found all these loopholes to get around protocol so that she could try to protect this human. And at the end of the first one, she takes her helmet off and she says, nothing binds me. Because she's not bound to her protocol anymore. She's found ways around it. So at this point, we see that Aerith has developed a form of sentience. She's AI, you know, so this is a pretty big deal. Unbound picks up right at the end there, but Aerith's body, the mech suit that she is a part of, has been taken control of by a foreign user. And so now it is up to Aerith to protect herself. But because she's no longer bound by the rules that AI typically follow, she's developed a sentience and she's not, you know, locked into protecting any one person or doing any one thing. She's able to rewrite her own protocol. And her protocol simply becomes save myself. So as Aerith, we actually get to, you know, see the inside of the databases for Domesticon, who were like kind of the overseeing, you know, AI in the first game. We actually enter their network in the second game, and we can use that network as Arid to hack into other AI, which then gives her the ability to maneuver around the world, and it gives players a sense of what else is going on in this world beyond what we just saw in the first game. We get to see what kind of role humans have played in this futuristic dystopia where, you know, robots are able to develop sentience and consciousness.
What's the gameplay like?
It's pretty much similar to what we had the first time around. They stuck to it pretty hardcore. It does give you the option when you first start up if you want to focus more on story or if you want to focus more on combat.
Oh, nice.
I picked story.
I knew it. And I would pick combat.
But even cool, though I picked option. Story, there was still combat in the game. It's just not as like an overwhelming part of it.
Yeah.
When you are in the mainframe in the network, you can be attacked by glitches, if you will. And so you do have that gunplay mechanic, and it's the same kind of gunplay that we had in the first one. So if you played that and you enjoyed that, you can expect more of it.
It sounds like fans of the first game are going to be right at home with this one.
Yeah, otherwise it's basically just puzzle solving and exploring the world, looking for clues. Because Arid has the ability to hijack other AI in this game, you have to find, instead of having the ability to find loopholes in her own system like we had in the first one, she has to instead find ways to manipulate the other AI that she's encountering this time. So in one instance, in the very beginning, so I don't give away any spoilers, she takes on, she like overpowers a butler. And this butler has a set cycle. So he has to take the master tea and he has to put lipstick on the mistress every day. And he's not allowed to deviate from this cycle. In order to progress anywhere in her search for trying to track down the user, Arid has to manipulate the world and the butler. Because if she tries to click on something while the butler is also in the body, he won't let her do it.
Interesting.
He can't break his programming won't let him break his own cycle. So Arid has to find ways to throw the cycle off. And so then that leaves the player to find ways to maneuver around the world with Arid within the butler's limitations. And then there are also a couple other characters that she interacts with through on. And again, every time she takes on a new host, she's stuck in that specific host's limitations. And each one of them are different.
Nice. Well, it sounds really good. It sounds like if you're a fan of the first one, you're going to enjoy this one. So I got to know, $17, what is your verdict?
Absolutely buy it. This one is easy buy it.
And I think there's even a bundle of the first and second game on sale right now for like $18 instead of $17. I know the first game has been ungodly cheap a number of times.
Yeah. They're definitely worth the money. If you haven't played the first and you're looking at this one, buy them both because the story does fit together. And I think you could probably get away with playing the second one without having played the first because there is like when you start it up, there's a little trailer and it's like previously in the fall.
I mean, the first one's cheap enough that just fucking get the first one. It's so cheap. Just go ahead
and there's guides. If you get stuck, there's guides. I think that's one of the best things too about this game. And I know I've already given my opinion and I don't care. I'm going to keep going. One of the best things was that.
Yeah, Carnage isn't making this show long enough, is he?
Dude, the best thing about it is that I never felt like I couldn't solve a puzzle on my own. Yeah, there's guides out there left and right, but there's plenty enough clues. They're challenging without being just hammer you down to where you feel like you can't do it at all. Like if you really sit and look at the world, you'll go, wow, that was under my nose the whole time. And I found that continued on into the second one as well. It did a really good job of keeping that up without becoming monotonous.
Nice. Well, I know it took like 3 years for the second game to come out. So hopefully the third part of the trilogy comes out before 2024.
gift, please.
So interesting about the story being like pretty easy to understand and, you know, figure out and stuff. But I was just looking at, of course, I'm going to talk about the achievements, right? Mm-hmm. I was just looking on the achievements, and I know the first one was pretty easy to get the 1K in, but the second one, I'm looking, only 49 people so far played it. You know, it's still relatively new, but one person only has completed it. And a lot of the achievements that people don't have are like really interesting, ambiguous descriptions. It's like, yeah. This one is like ideal log, you will save yourself, and like butler scissorhands, close shave. Okay, some of them are storyline.
Yeah, but, some of them. Well, the like the butler scissorhands, like I did the butler chapter and then realized I missed that one. So it's easy to miss them if you're not like, you know, using a guide to specifically point out, because just like the first one, you know, sometimes you will have dialogue options where, you know, there's, you can either just go ahead and jump into something and agree, or you can push it. And, you know, like sometimes it'll want you to push it and then just jump into it and agree rather than pushing it two or three times.
Oh,
and it'll be like, oh, you changed your mind, and give you the achievement for that. And like, as I was playing through, I was just going through for the experience and not really pushing for the achievements. So I didn't really like push to try to find the correct combination of like dialogue.
Plus it looks like there's a lot of collectibles too, like logs. Only one person got all those so far.
Yeah, there's logs, but they're not overwhelmingly. I think in the first one too, there was only like 12 of them or something. It's not
to be fair, you're right. It's only 2 days that the game's been out, so I'm sure someone will put a guide up for everything.
I'm sure Mac will have one up soon if he doesn't already. Yeah, true.
I was looking when I did the first one, and I figured Macca would have a guide for it, and he did not. And I was like, the fuck is this?
Doctor.
What kind of world where there's no Macca's guide?
Oh, man. Anyway, next game is called Seven, The Days Long Gone, developed by Imogen Pro, or IMGN.pro, however they want to be called, and Fool's Theory, published by Imogen Pro, again, released December 1st on Steam for $29.99. Seven, The Days Long Gone is an open-world isometric role-playing game in which you play as Teriel, I think, a master thief sent on a mission that will shake the foundations of the Vetral Empire. Why do they make these crazy words? Free roam across the vibrant prison island of Peh, P-E-H, I like that one, Peh, and choose whether to help or exploit its many citizens. Dark Mika covered this one, sent in her review, and this is what she's got to say. Oh, God, hers are getting longer, and I swear, Dark Mika, every time I see a new review from you, it's like four times longer than the last.
She's learning from me.
I'm going to take a sip here quick. Seven, The Days Long Gone is an isometric stealth hack and slash action RPG that in a post-apocalyptic world after a war between humans and demons. You play as Teriel, a master thief. You're caught by the ruler of the people of Drugen and sent to the prison island of Peh. The only way off Peh is to do its bidding. He knew someone was going to get caught, wasn't sure who, but he was going to use that person regardless. Sadly, that person happened to be you. Not usually fond of isometric games, but this one was really fun. You could zoom in and out while playing to see things better depending on your current needs, which is nice. However, for me anyways, combat was really hard as it would sometimes zoom in or out while I was fighting. On top of that, combat is already pretty punishing. You're meant to be a thief, not an assassin, so fighting isn't Teriel's strong point. Dies pretty fast and doesn't have much in the way of fighting moves. Thankfully, though, there is a silent backstab move you can do, which makes things easier, but you have to be stealthy to use it, which I would imagine is the point in a stealth game. weapons are hard to come by. You can buy them or kill people for their weapons, but there's only 6 types, so it's not a large selection. Different qualities and materials that can be made out of that chain that change the damage output. Often you'll find a good weapon, equip it, and only find garbage for 20 plus hours. Good armor is also hard to find. You can equip other people's full armor sets to use as a disguise, but those are really worthless. Enemies know who you are and immediately attack you if they see you wearing their armor as a disguise. The game is massive. I put over 70 hours into the game and only did a couple of main missions in that time frame. You want to, no, need to do the side missions. They often bring you to areas you might not otherwise go to, which may net you nectar, which lets you add more skills to your character, or skills and the upgrades for them. Without these, you're not going to get very far in the game. Game doesn't hold your hand at all. gives you a map and places circles on it where you can find objects for your various quests. Also gives you a journal that tells you what the quests are, but that's really it. You can do whatever you want, whenever you want, so chances are you're going to die a lot. If you're like me, more than a lot. But even when I died constantly, it didn't really upset me much because it was fun. I love when people die a lot in games. There are a couple issues with the game of varying degrees. The memory needs for the game tend to sit around 2 gig of memory, which is fine. But sometimes it spikes for no reason to 6 gig, which is insane and unnecessary. Caused the game to crash many times for me, and your level of detail in the game doesn't change this issue at all. There isn't a timed autosave system. You get them occasionally when you interact with quests, but most of the time you have to manually save. You'll forget to, like me, and die plenty of times, like me. Other than that, though, the game is really good. It has different environments, which make the world feel alive. The world is heavily populated with NPCs, almost all of which you can butcher if you want to take out your occasional anger on them in a bloody psychopathic rampage. Also, only shopkeepers don't respawn, so butcher everyone else to your heart's content. For $30, this is totally a buy it. It's a huge game you'll put a lot of time into. There are lots of missions and places to explore. World is interesting, and the interaction between Teriel and the demon he's working with is hilarious, since they both think fairly little of the other. However, for those who can't stand stealth, I'm not sure how much you'll like this. You can't fight more than one or two people at a time without being completely fucked. Stealth isn't usually hard, so I'd still suggest it to people who aren't super fond of stealth, because the story is good, open world is fun to play around in. Note, hundreds of NPCs were hurt, maimed, and butchered in the making of this review. So thank you, Dark Mika, for that one. That one sounds awesome.
Yeah, 70 plus hours. Wow, that's cool.
I don't know if I've ever spent 70 hours on a review title. That is crazy. I don't have that kind of time. Oh, man. Anyway, we have a 2-pack of mixed reality games to talk about with you, Kaforna Forge. Yay.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And the first one we're going to handle is called Windlands, developed and published by SciTech Games. It released October 31st on Windows 10 for $19.99, previously on PlayStation VR and other VR places, I would assume. Soar through the ruins of a fallen civilization and discover the secrets of the ancient world. It appeals to those who want to explore the breathtaking vistas at a relaxing pace, while the challenging routes attract gamers who like to master the skills of soaring through towering environments at top speed. Scott, what'd you think of this?
So yeah, I played this on the new Windows 10 mixed reality stuff they got going on. I bought a headset a couple months ago now. I mean, they haven't been coming out with too many games for it. I hope they keep doing more. But anyway, this game, Windlands, that one basically is a lot like a game where you can explore by almost like that game Air, where you fly around a lot. It kind of reminded me of that. But instead of flying around just with wings or whatever, you use the grappling hook. You have 2 grappling hooks, one in each hand. And I found it really fun. Just the mechanics of it work really well. Grappling, all around,
swinging around
land, feeling like you're a Spider-Man. I mean, it really feels really good with, the game mechanics, and it looks beautiful as mentioned in that description. The game itself, there's not like a lot of storyline or, depth to it, but if you like it kind of games just where you can relax or explore, I was having a blast with it just doing that. I think the mixed reality works really good with that, and basically the controls feel good. There's some challenge to it, like I said. There's optional stuff that you can do, like speed runs. Or you could take it slow and just kind of chill. And
I really enjoyed it when I played it on PlayStation VR, just because if you wanted, you could just fuck around and climb things and explore. It was a really entertaining game on PSVR. Although I'll admit, I got like stupidly motion sick with this one. How did you fare with it?
I'm someone who never gets motion sick in anything, and
even fuck you again.
It's still affected. It still affected me a bit. I was like, holy shit, when I, grab on with both at the same time and then jump and pull, like propel yourself up with the momentum.
Your stomach, you're gonna feel that shit.
Yeah, dude, crazy. That was like almost like a ride in a park or something. But no, I really enjoyed my time with it so far. I spent a couple hours with it. You know, like I said, there's not a lot of depth. If you're looking for like a big, you know, a deep storyline and puzzles and stuff, it's not really that type of game. It's more of just an exploration, have fun kind of simulator, you know, a grappling simulator. It feels good with the mixed reality. I haven't played it on the other VR stuff, so I'm not sure how to compare that. But
my other question is, people have discovered that you could play some of the Windows 10 mixed reality games without a mixed reality headset. We're going to be covering that another one next that is more in line with that. But how does Windlands, is that playable without a headset, or is this something that you need to have the headset?
In my opinion, it works without the headset, and it definitely does with the controller, with the Xbox controller or, you know, keyboard, mouse or whatever. But you really don't get the point of the game that way. It really is meant for the VR, for the grappling hooks, because, you know, this one just doesn't work like that.
Nice.
So I wouldn't recommend it. I would only recommend it with a mixed reality headset.
I was just going to say, for $20, if someone has a mixed reality headset, is it worth looking into? Or don't have one, is it worth looking into?
I would definitely get it. If you have a mixed reality headset already for Windows 10, this is a must-have, especially just for the sheer amount of fun you can have exploring or relaxing, or you could take it to the extreme and, you know, challenge yourself in these speedrun, harder routes and stuff like that.
Speedrun to see how fast you could throw up.
Yeah. Nice. But yeah, motion sickness, the game, drop dead.
but it doesn't sound like something that is worth checking out if you don't have the mixed reality headset.
If you don't, I mean, mixed reality headsets right now are very expensive. I got one just because I got like a new computer. I was like, oh, I'm just going to go all out, get a high-end computer. And nice. I figured I'd get the, you know, it was like $300 on Black Friday. So $100 off. So yeah, normally $400 they go for about. So yeah, if you don't have a headset yet, it's not really, I would kind of hold off, but that's also part of the reason, is, you know, there's not too many mixed reality Xbox Live games yet, or in general, not even, you know, there's a couple that have achievements and stuff, and that's obviously one of the hooks that got me in. But you know,
I couldn't interrupt him before he got it out.
Don't worry, Eternal guys, you got to hang in there. You just got to hang in there.
Can we just throw into the wind?
Fuck everyone. We
God
got
damn it, Cole busting hers out as well.
Can I just like
take all your reviews? Good.
Like if Dark has any more reviews, can I just read all of her reviews and like put puns in?
She has another one to read if you want to read it later.
Anyway, but there
is one other mixed reality game to talk about, and this one has been getting fairly popular in the achievement hunting community because it's a mixed reality game that people have figured out works really fucking well without the mixed reality headset. And that is Crystal Rift, also developed and published by SciTech Games. This one came out January 26th on Windows 10 for $9.99. Crystal Rift is a grid-based dungeon crawler in classic first-person perspective, an experimental horror challenge game that takes the player through a series of increasingly mysterious locations. Again, another game I checked out on PSVR and I enjoyed. This is something I could really see working well without needing mixed reality. So how does it play? How did it work for you?
So for that aspect of it, I would say this one, unlike the other one, for Crystal Rift, I felt like it was more fun and actually, you know, not as necessary to use a mixed reality headset. I actually was doing fine with the keyboard and mouse, or you can use a Xbox controller or the two motion controllers they give you, kind of like with the analogs and other buttons and stuff. You can use the one left and right hand, but you could still play it without the headset. So like both titles, you could play without the headset. But this one, I actually felt that it really didn't need it, in my opinion. And there was not, you know, the other one was more of a, I wouldn't say gimmick, but, you know, it was the point of it was to grapple, and this one, it's just like a basic dungeon crawler going forward, left, turning, you know, kind of like in a sense in the game Crypt of the Serpent King, which I didn't really like that game, but comparing it to the gameplay of it, if you guys are familiar with of that one, I thought this was better than that. It, you know, just comparing it to Crypt of the Serpent King. But if you don't know what that is, it's this game, basically Crystal Rift is like a old school dungeon crawler, first person. You know, you get some combat, you have treasure chests and different keys and stuff you could find, open doors, hazards, some action here and there, adventure, whatever. But it's it really, I didn't feel like it needed mixed reality. I tried it with both, and yeah, I wasn't compelled to bother putting the headset on for it.
Nice. So overall, $10 on this one with the headset, without the headset. What do you recommend?
If you don't have a headset, don't bother with it. If you have a headset already, actually, wait. I mean, it's not really, in my opinion, the game itself. Either way, is not like that. I didn't enjoy it that much. It's okay. I would say try it. Either way, if you have a headset, it's hard to even recommend it still. If not, you know, I would say still try it either way.
Okay. What about achievement whores who don't have a headset? That's what we're getting at here, right?
The achievement review of it. I don't know. You can get some just by beating every floor. There's like 18 or 20 floors of the game, and you can play them on different difficulties. They're decent. You get a couple on the way, just by going through grindy stuff as well. So it's not like super quick, but there's a bunch they give you along the way just for beating every level.
Nice. So sounds good. Another VR game to talk about called Pop-Up Pilgrims, developed and published by Dako Dako Limited. This one came out February 13th on PlayStation VR for $14.99. Floating Cloud God and his devoted pilgrims have a big adventure ahead. Discover a world of pop-up islands, colorful characters, and deadly demons, all uniquely presented as 2D graphics in a wraparound 3D space. More than 50 stages curve around the player as they try to lead the pilgrims to take on a cast of lively enemies and find a safe route to the exit. This feels kind of like a 3D Lemmings style game. It's really, wow, really interesting. First off, the game is beautiful. This is such a stellar looking game. The whole 2D in a 3D plane, it works so beautifully. It's like a pop-up, like a pop-up book, and it's called Pop-Up Pilgrim, so I guess that fucking makes sense.
like Paper Mario in VR or some
shit? Pretty much.
Together now.
It awesome. Really, it is very much like a wraparound Paper Mario-style game with multiple depths and planes of gameplay that you could play on. Nice. The way the game plays is a number of pilgrims will show up in this area with different platforms, I guess, just areas of land that they'll walk back and forth on. Every now and then they will jump either forward or backward a plane to another floating land mass that they can walk on. There will be collectibles and stages that you can command them to jump and pick up or just collect and deliver where they have to. A lot of this comes down to precise movement and planning of how you're going to do things, because the way you make, most of the time they will just move automatically. They'll walk back and forth on whatever land area they're on. Every now and then they'll automatically jump back to another area or jump forward to another area. But a lot of the times you need to individually go to a pilgrim and basically kind of look at them and then use the analog or you can use the analog stick, or you can look in a direction and they'll jump, or you can kind of create a trajectory for them to jump to either, you know, pick up something or jump across a gap or whatever else. It's just, it feels very, very imprecise on the PlayStation VR. I put a chunk of time into this. It was just, oh man, there was so much frustration with this game because the pilgrims, kind of like Lemmings, will just be in a line and they'll just go.
Sounds like a chore almost, like to get to that lemming to make him do what you want.
Yeah. And the thing is, because it is so imprecise and it comes down to just kind of like looking in a direction, one of the pilgrims will be highlighted and you'll hit the button. You'll hit like the left trigger to make him jump. But in that half a second, it'll switch to a different pilgrim and they'll jump and they might miss and just die. It was so easy to fuck up out of nowhere with this game. It would have been awesome if there was some kind of rewind feature in it, because a lot of the stages, if you want to get a gold medal on the stage, you got to get all the collectibles and you got to get all the pilgrims to the exit. One dies, you might as well just start over. And there were so many times that I was like, you jump here, you jump here, you jump here. No, why did you jump there? You died. I got to start over.
Wow.
There was just
that sucks.
A lot of frustration because of how imprecise it would be. This is a game that I feel would work well on like a Switch or a 3DS with touchscreen so that you can, it's more tangible of like, okay, this specific pilgrim, you directly, you jump here. And then you just walk back and forth, do whatever the fuck you want. I'm going to work with this guy for a bit. Because most of the time, you know, the pilgrims, they'll be in a safe area and they'll just walk back and forth until you tell them what to do. But just how imprecise it is to pick the pilgrim you want to do what you want. It's going to make me balder than I already am, really.
Now, there's no way to play that one without the VR, right?
No.
Is there?
This is VR only, PlayStation VR only. I know there are a handful of PlayStation games that you can play without it. This one requires it.
Mm.
I kind of want to see what it would be like to play with just the controller, but even the controller controls in the game, you can use the right analog stick, and even the tutorial things would be like, use the right analog stick to choose a pilgrim and then release it to make them jump, except... Like, you'll hold a direction, and it'll just... It feels like it would randomly switch between pilgrims. It would never really be the one I want it to be, and when I would release the analog stick, someone I didn't even consider it was targeting would jump off a cliff and die.
Fuck.
Yeah, there is a lot of times that people are going to jump off cliffs and die in this game. Yeah, there's a bunch of stages in the game. I think there's like 50-some stages in the game. Split up into worlds, so you complete a world, you move on. The game does introduce ways to change it up as you go through, so they're constantly introducing new obstacles or new tricks that you can do in the game. It's just, it's really, really hard to get into with how imprecise the pilgrim selection aspect could be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of frustration, but it's a fun game. It is a gorgeous game. For $15, I'd still give it a kind of middle of the road try. It if it works for you and you really get into it, you're gonna have a lot of fun with it. And again, this is a beautiful game. This is easily one of the best looking PSVR games I've seen, just with style. It is colorful, the depth and dimension of the stages, it works really well, but just gameplay wise,
precision is lacking a bit. Right?
Pretty much. We do have two other reviews that we're going to cut to now. I still don't know how to do segues on these, so let's just pretend I had a segue here.
All right, next game to talk about is called Dragon Sinker, developed by EXE Create, published by Kemco, released February 6th on PS4 and Vita for $14.99, and is a cross-buy title. Join forces with elves and dwarves and slay the evil dragon Wyrmvarg in this retro-style fantasy RPG. We got our good friend Len Stewart joining to talk about this one. Len, how are you doing?
Doing good, man. Doing all right.
This is your first time on the show not talking about Pixel Noir?
Yeah. I want to, throw my hat into the SML podcast to, review RPGs with you guys, because I'm an RPG freak. I've been playing every RPG, Japanese and American, since I was like 6 years old. So
nice. Well, what did you think of Dragon Sinker?
To be honest, I think it was a real sinker. It's a cross between like Dragon Quest and like Final Fantasy V, and the story is just okay. You know, I like that it has a story that kind of talks about like racism in a way, because they're basically there's this dragon that's there, and you fight him at the beginning of the game, and the people of the world have to sacrifice people to this dragon to keep him happy, so they don't burn down the villages or whatever. And
always good.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Oh god, you're breaking up again.
Ah, crap. You're kidding me. No.
I can hear you again. No. Okay, you're good again.
Okay, good.
You said it talks about racism, and I went, oh, that's interesting.
It does. Because basically what happens is as you go through the game, people are kind of blaming like each other. The elves are blaming the humans, and the dwarves are kind of like blaming the humans and not so much the elves, and the humans are blaming the elves. It's kind of like this kind of circular racism thing that's kind of going through the game. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but the overall story was just very much like, okay, you pounded this shit to death, you man. You know, like, let's just move past that and, like, maybe talk about something else in, you know, some of the main story dialogue, and they couldn't get away from it. So, you know, to that, like, the stories are just okay. There's a lot of nostalgic feeling behind it, like, you know, the 16-bit graphics, things like that. You can have a team of four fighters. There's a really weird, unique system in this game where you can have three teams of four, and each team is controlled by one of the main people that you come across in the game. So you play as the main characters, the human prince, and you eventually meet the elf, who's like a princess, and you then meet the dwarf, who is a prince for his kingdom too. They're all leaders of their kingdoms. And you form three different units with them. But then you can get, like, characters along the way through, like, side quests and stuff like that to fill out these teams. But to be honest, I really just played with the one team, like, the entire game. I didn't really see a reason to use any of the other teams or swap them out, you know?
Yeah.
It was just, like, kind of a useless mechanic. I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's kind of what my overall thing was. But, like, there was different things. Like, I thought it was kind of lame that you couldn't equip other party members other than the main party members in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you can only equip, like, the three main characters. But any other characters that you would get through, like, side quests or stuff like that, you couldn't equip them with anything.
See, part of me wouldn't mind that because how many times in RPGs do you get, you know, a temporary party member that you give them some awesome equipment and then they leave the party and they take all that shit with them?
Yeah, but in Dragon Seeker, nobody leaves. Everybody just stays slow. So it's not like you have a guy who dies, you know, in the game. You just keep accumulating characters. So in this game, you know, in most situations, I would agree with you, right? Like, oh shit, I put the you know, the crazy ass light sword on this guy and he left my party. I also kind of thought like the job system was a little like confusing and unnecessary at the same time. Like I could just make a whole party of knights and or warriors in this case and just go and just slay everything, you know.
Sounds good to me. I don't know.
Yeah, there's also a lot of ways to break the game. So if you have let's say that you get these things called dragon points, and I guess they're achieved through like just battling. You eventually just gather points, and so like there's a shop option where you can buy items that help you cheat. I found one thing that it's called a dream fragment, and it gives you +5 to all your stats. So and it only costs 100 dragon points, which is like nothing in this game. Because you can get like thousands and thousands of dragon points. So I would take the dragon points and buy these dream fragments and start boosting my characters. And then I was like, well, this is stupid. Well, I wonder how much I can actually sell these things for. And since like money is kind of a hard thing to get in this game, it was great to be able to sell these dream fragments for like $5,000 a piece for only 100 dragon points. So I would just totally like get a shitload of money and go buy like awesome equipment for my guys, you know. So really, like the dragon points only buy things that like boost your stats, and that's okay, I guess. You know, I mean, if you really need to make the game easier on easy mode, then you know then that's the thing I guess you want to do. Or if you don't really want to farm, it kind of gives you a quick way to not farm, you know. Yeah. So that's kind of the way that went. I kind of like the lottery tickets that you would get from either completing side quests or things like that, because you play the lottery, and it's a random item drop, basically, that you get. And it could be a good item or a bad item, but the more, like, items that you sell in the game or buy in the game, the more likely that you'll end up with a better weapon or a better item of some sort, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Also, here's one thing I did think that was kind of weird, though. Whenever I would, like, if you're in a village and you go inside of, like, a store or an inn or something like that, the interiors are so big. Like, you can't see the walls. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to go into this weapon shop. Ba-blam! And it's this big, like, store, you know? And I'm like, the size does not, you know, equate well, you know? Because I keep thinking, like, my God, would I just walk into a castle? You know? No, it's the item store, you know? I'm just going to go buy a potion and get the hell out of here. But, you know, it was just kind of weird like that. I thought it was fun overall. Like, I enjoyed it as, like, a, you know, a regular RPG that I could just get into. But I think they made a lot of questionable design choices that, I don't know, just kind of seem weird to me.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the good things about Kemco's RPGs is that they release a good number of them, and it feels like every now and then they'll kind of, like, try new stuff and see what sticks and what works and what doesn't. And I don't know, I enjoy what they put out. I enjoy the classic retro RPGs, and for the price, I don't think they're that bad. So for $15, getting it for the PS4 and the Vita, what do you think of Dragon Sinker?
I think it's a little high, to be honest, because they were selling it, for, $10 on Nintendo on 3DS, I believe, and PC.
Yeah, but you only get the one version there. With this one, you get it on the PS4 and the Vita.
Yes, yes, you do. And I understand the price point difference. I just feel like it's too high, like, especially since, like, there are games that are, like, $6, and they're as complex as this game is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay if you are an RPG person and you feel like you want to play, like, a retro RPG for $15, then definitely pick it up. Yeah.
We'll have to get you and Chris Taylor on together one of these days to just talk Kemco RPGs.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But, Len, thank you for checking this one out and coming on and chatting. We're going to have to get you on the show to chat about Pixel Noir really soon.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
Hit up Kunal, get both of you guys on here, and we'll just chitty-chat.
Yeah, you got it.
Cool. Well, do you have any final thoughts to sum up Dragon Sinker?
I'm going to give you my little rating system then. I'm going to say it's a 5 out of 10. How about that?
Well, our usual review scale is buy it, try it, or deny it.
Okay. I'm going to say try it. Because it might be for you, it kind of wasn't for me, but this is come from a guy who's played pretty much every RPG in existence. So, yeah. Try it. You'll like it. Maybe.
All right, next game to talk about is called Aperion Cyberstorm, developed and published by Apiori Digital, released February 8th on the Switch, Steam, and believe it or not, the Wii U for $14.99, with an Xbox release planned for later this year. Unleash destruction alone or with your friends in the 2D twin-stick bullet hell Aperion Cyberstorm. Find new elements and abilities and mix them for more destructive power. Beat your enemies with plasma-coated spiral rockets, scrap them with electric mines, or overwhelm them off with devastating lasers. Good luck checking this one out. Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Just all right?
Yeah. Only just.
Funny enough.
I'm still dying.
Nice.
Still copping all over the place.
Funny enough, literally just seconds ago, I was talking about you with Len Stewart, because he covered Dragon Sinker on the PS4.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I just beat that.
Did you?
Yeah. I got two of the three endings.
Nice. He didn't seem to enjoy it as much as you enjoy the Kemco games.
He is a fool and a dullard. He needs to learn about video games.
Well, when the episode is out, you can listen to it, and then you can hear his review. And I mentioned I should get the both of you on together sometime. And despite the fact that your reviews are literally back-to-back.
Oh.
And when you listen to it, it kind of sounds like he left and you immediately joined.
I see.
That is the power of editing, folks.
Hooray.
Believe it or not.
Podcast.
So tell me about Aperion Cyberstorm.
Aperion Cyberstorm. It's such a, I don't know, I like epic titles for games, and that's That's definitely one. Okay, so this game reminds me actually a lot of Vostok Inc., which is, you know, one I checked out a little while ago. Only instead of being a goofy, like, satirical take on capitalism, it's like a super for serious guys sort of, I guess you could call it cyberpunk sci-fi. Maybe it's just sci-fi. I'm not entirely sure. I had a bit of trouble getting around the story, to be honest. But well, because, okay, so what the game actually is it is a twin-stick shooter, which, of course, to remind the viewers at home, a twin-stick shooter is like Geometry Wars, or there's several others I can't remember right now. But it's where one stick moves the ship around in a 360-degree sort of, you know, flat plane. So, you know, you scoot your guy around. And then the other stick aims an auto fire. That is to say, you can be, like, you know, backing away from the enemy by ratcheting one direction on the stick and then still shooting them by ratcheting the opposite direction with the other stick.
So one stick does the pew-pew, the other stick does the runaway.
Yeah, one stick does vroom-vroom, one stick does pew-pew.
Yeah, technical terms. So,
technical terms, yes, we're industry people here now. We're serious journalists. So this one's a little bit different. Like, it basically seems to be the greatest feature to it is the five players at once aspect to it, which, you know, to be honest, seems like it would be kind of hard to pull off all five players because, you know, it would, because you can't just unlock the Joy-Cons and use one. You have to use both. So you'd have to have a lot of
twin stick needing the two sticks.
Yeah, you would have to have upwards of $8,000 worth of controllers in your house to get a proper five-player game of this going. Actually, no, I got a $20 Hori pad that's really good. Hori makes the best controllers.
Well, there you go, then. So it would only take $6,000.
Yes. But anyway, so obviously I played most of the game in one-player mode, and what happens is that you get into these levels, and the story kind of happens while you're flying around, which is how it goes in Vostok Inc. It just basically pulls up lines of dialogue between characters, which usually you have to advance before it actually does anything, but you can still, you know, move freely around. And all of the quests, like, it goes into, like, all these complicated quests, like, but all it ends up being is just working your way through a level and shooting things that fly at you. So it's like, we gotta hack this computer, but it's just flying through a room and shooting things. And it's like, we gotta, you know, we gotta investigate this one thing, and then that also involves going into a room and shooting things, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a disconnect from the storyline and what's actually going on screen, and the other thing is that I couldn't find where I was supposed to find where all these characters are being established, because several levels in, they introduce this bad guy, and my good guy is talking to, well, my good girl. It's actually I believe the one player default protagonist is female. But yeah, they were, you know, trash talking each other, and I'm like, who is this? He just seems unmotivatedly, like, evil, but they also seem to have, like, this history, and they're, like, recalling things in the plot that I have not seen. And so I just, you know, the story made me a little confused, but it didn't really matter because all it kind of boiled down to was going into rooms and shooting stuff.
I mean, shooters don't really need much of a crazy in-depth story. You just want to go in and shoot shit.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I guess it's just kind of there for flavor, or maybe there's more lore that you can look up somehow, or maybe it, like, all gets revealed at the end of the game, like, where everyone's coming from, like Final Fantasy VIII.
No, there you go.
But anyways, yeah, what the point is the action, of course, and the action is very, very good. It's a very fast little shooter. They make no bones about sending, like, all the enemies at you at once, and in that sense, it's very Geometry Wars style, because your character, the graphics are presented in a kind of line drawing way, but they're very detailed, so it's not like you're not a sprite as a ship. You look more like a collection of vector lines. And the stages are also, like, they're solid, but they're also built out of, like, straight lines and things like that. So it has an odd... the presentation is, like, this odd sort of almost retro, but not quite. Like, it's modern, but it's just trying to look generally retro, not, like, retro video game. Yeah. Just, like, retro aesthetic. And same thing with the music. It's, like, it's all modern synths, modern instrumentation, but, you know, it's definitely sort of calling back to that sort of, you know, what do they call it? The retro wave or something?
Yeah, something like that.
That weird sort of 80s pastiche that nobody our age understands. It's a little bit like that.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
So overall, sounds like it's a pretty solid, fun shooter.
Yes. I would say this is definitely for people who like the action of Geometry Wars or Vostok, but they wanted a little bit more depth and seriousness to it. And plus, of course, the big selling feature is the five-player thing for the rich kids with friends.
Yeah, for the thousandaires out there.
For the thousandaires there who somehow have four friends that will come over and play this.
Yeah,
I think it's actually online, too, though. So.
Oh, that'd be neat.
Let me...
What do you think of the fact that they still released it on the Wii U of all platforms?
That's fine. They're still... I mean, The Wii U is only, like, what, 5 years old? They could still come out with games for it. I mean, the other thing is that it's... it's possible that, you know, without... You know, as long as the game doesn't require, like, things on the Switch, it shouldn't be too hard to, like, sort of, you know, jig it a little to, you know, fit on the retro system. No. And yeah, speaking of, this has no touchscreen apparatus whatsoever. I would have kind of liked to see that, just because I loved playing Geometry Wars on the DS, where you got to use the stylus to guide as the right stick. That was really fun, but I could definitely see that being bothersome on the Switch, so I don't know, maybe never mind.
Well, for $15, then, what is your verdict on Aperion Cyberstorm?
$15, it's another great Switch shooter. Shooter fans get it. Casual fans... maybe look at it, see if it's a little intense. Now, it does feature leveling up and upgrading weapons, and all the levels are replayable. So this is one that if you're having a tough time, just go back a few levels and work your way back to it, and you'll be fine. So it's pretty forgiving in that way. So actually, I would say this is actually probably a better twin-stick shooter for beginners than something else.
Nice.
So go for it.
Sounds good. And I'm personally looking forward to this one coming to Xbox later on this year. Hopefully it'll hit PlayStation as well.
Yeah, let's get that cross-platform wireless thing going on.
That'll never happen.
Oh, and I guess I should mention that also this features an onslaught mode where you can just do straight up shooting forever.
Nice. So just pew pew forever.
Yeah, pew pew forever and pew, vroom, pew, and vroom, vroom.
Cool. Yes. Well, Chris, thank you as always for checking this one out. Any final thoughts to sum it up?
It looks like it doesn't have online multiplayer that I can see, so there you go. It looks like it's just for the millionaire controller owning people.
And pew pew.
And pew pew.
All right, back to us. Next game to talk about is called Fumiko, developed and published by Fumiko Game Studio, released February 23rd, so it'll be out soon on Xbox One for $9.99. Take a surreal trip through a twisted virtual network and uncover the secrets this world tries to hide from you, an artificial intelligence named Fumiko. Fumiko combines rewarding exploration with a new approach to 3D platforming. You'll quickly be unbound from gravity. No jump will be too short. Fumiko is a sci-fi thriller that wants to be explored thoroughly. Cole, tell me about this one.
You pretty much nailed it all right there. My review's done.
Fumiko, what?
I'm just, God damn it.
I knew it was coming.
Sometimes the description just tells you like everything I had in my notes, and I just have to throw the notes and be like, well, that's that.
Nice.
It is an exploratory platformer, though, like you mentioned, and it's it has a low poly art style, which is, it's really well done. The beginning of the game especially focuses very heavily on a lot of soft, bright colors, but it's kind of like juxtaposed against this world where everything is very harsh edged and cubed, and it's not as like soft and welcoming as you would kind of expect given the color scheme. You play as Fumiko, who is basically the persona of a program. In the very beginning of the game, she's awoken by At Wilson, who is the IT for the world. And he informs her that she's had some kind of software malfunction. And so he's had to boot her into this safe world, if you will, and, you know, start her from scratch. So she doesn't have any memories, and she's not really sure what's happened, who she is, how she's here, or anything like that. So very early on, this kind of area serves as like a training mode for the game. Mm-hmm. And this is where we learn like all the basic mechanics. Like I said, it's a platformer. So of course you learn you're going to be able to jump, but then you quickly learn that, oh no, you can also double jump. And it's because, given the nature that Fumiko is a program, she can easily be upgraded with modules that give her special abilities. Mm-hmm. So as you progress through the game, these modules become more and more elaborate because she's in a network. She's not grounded by physics and reality. So you start off with a double jump. Then you eventually get a triple jump. Then you can have a quad jump. Then you can have a dash, and you can just dash through the air and, you know, space out your jumps so that you traverse large quantities of this network in, you know, it's not quite like it's in space, but there's nothing that really grounds it, if that makes sense. It's kind of difficult to explain it, but there's these large open areas and, you know, with the platforms that you can move through for each section. And it plays well for the most part, as far as like the abilities to jump and all that go. But there are a few times where it gets a little wonky. There are instances where there are like invisible bridges that Fumiko will come across that she needs to leap from a bridge, and it's visible while she's standing on it. But once she leaps, it disappears. And so it can kind of like fuck with your perception of where you need to land at, because you don't really have the basis for where you jumped from, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it can kind of make the platforming a little more difficult than it should be. It's easy to recover when this happens, though, because, again, you do have multiple jumps and the dashes and the dives. And as you progress, you kind of learn the mechanics of these enough that you can time them in ways that you can get yourself out of some pretty hairy situations. It's also not overwhelmingly damning, because if you fall and she dies, you just reboot to the last checkpoint, and these are just scattered around each level as like a little yellow orb, and you can find them fairly liberally. They're just kind of everywhere.
Nice.
Crackdown. Oh,
you're about to make a big giant jump here. Touch this first.
Like, you know? The Crackdown orb days. Nice. Oh man.
Oh, I can't wait for Crackdown 3 with orbs. I can't wait to just get lost in those again.
Are anyway. We done?
Anyway, this is a stylish looking. I love how this game looks.
It is, and it's really beautiful. There is some problems with it. Just one major one for
me. Let's hear it.
It's because everything is low poly, there's not a lot of detail to the items in the world. There are collectibles. There are 26 memories that Fumiko can find to help build up the story, and so you kind of understand what's going on and happening to her a little better. These are hidden in each level, and they're yellow. And they're just like little yellow squares. They're different yellow from like the checkpoint orbs, in that those are like a bright yellow, and these are more like a muted kind of orangey, maybe yellow ochre you might even get away with. But like in some of the places that you are in the very beginning specifically, there's a lot of orange and yellow backgrounds too. And so you can just be jumping all over the damn place trying to find these memories. And it could be right beside you and you wouldn't know because it's yellow and it blends into the background. And I'm just sitting there going, how many times did I run past this bookcase?
So it's just more Dandara for you, huh?
Kind of. Yeah. But at least the plus side is you can press the start menu and it will tell you how many you have left to find in that specific level.
Nice.
Oh, okay, that's good.
And even though the game is it's fairly linear in that you need to go from one section to the other and find these memories and uncover what's happening, but you can also backtrack. So as long as you can get back to the safe pod that you traveled to that area in, you can go back to the area before. So if you find yourself getting overwhelmingly frustrated, like take a break and go to the next area and hope that it's not as yellow and that you might have a better time finding some of the memory parts there. Then you can go back and get mad again. And I did that a lot.
Nice. So,
and I still think I gave up and was like 3 out of 4. And I was like, I'm done. Can't do this.
Nice. So overall, $10 on this one. What do you think?
This is a pretty solid try. It. Other than, you know, like sometimes you jump off of them platforms and have no idea where the fuck you're going. Other than that, it was really creative that you weren't bound by physics. And you could just go wherever you wanted by jumping. And the story is surprisingly dark. When you get to the end, you're just like, okay. And not everybody was telling me the truth throughout this game, and some shit has happened. So, At Wilson may or may not be your friend after all. But it was really interesting story-wise, so I definitely give it a recommended try it.
Sounds good. And if you're still not sold, probably sometime soon after launch, we will be doing a giveaway for a couple of copies of that. So stay tuned to us if you want to get something free of it. I mean, like, look, we don't always give shit away for free on the show anyway, right?
Oh, snap.
We give look things away?
And in chat, it looks like...
Always giving shit away. Always.
Like right now in the Mixer chat, if you're watching on... live.
Mixer people just got something fun in there. Anyway,
everyone watching it later on.
One final game to talk about tonight is called The Initiate, developed and published by Deceptive Games. It released August 1st of last year on Steam for $14.99, but we just got it recently and Dark Mika checked it out now. So opening your eyes, you see a modern looking bedroom. All is quiet. Vague memories flash in your mind as you stand from the, as you stand from the cold wooden floor. Voice bellows from an intercom and tells you your mission. Use your intelligence and escape. This is your trial. Again, Dark Mika covered this one, and Scott, we're going to make you read something, so do it up.
Yeah, and then maybe I could even fill in some puns in her review here.
This is all on you. I'm just going to sit and listen to this one.
I'm going to initiate this review by putting some puns in. Fuck you. That's too much work. We're just going to read it. Maybe. We'll see. It's a surprise. All right. The Initiate is an incredibly large escape room type of game. It's listed as horror, but it actually has a creepy atmosphere at most. You play as Nathan. I'm really going to explain this, R and I. You wake up in a room with no memory of how you got there. Like every other escape the room game that's ever existed in the history of ever. If this is new information to anyone, I'm both shocked and moderately depressed. But I digress. This one amps it up a bit. Instead of one room and an entire house, and it's a pretty big one at that. The gameplay and mechanics are really simple. You get a basic jump to get over stuff if you happen to catch on something when walking. A crouch button, which is used pretty heavily to see either stuff lower in the environment or to get to crouching only places. there's also a sprint button, but I found that I didn't really use that much because the house is big, but it's also rather compact, so it's easy and fast to get everywhere you need to go. Beyond that, there is a flashlight button, and eventually a button that puts a colored lens over it. This is moderately useful. Once you get the flashlight, you generally leave it on for the rest of the game. And when you get the colored lens for the light, you use that the rest of the game. There's absolutely no point to ever turning it off. There's also an inventory button, which isn't very useful. A lot of shit that's not useful in this game, apparently. unless you're checking notes, since it automatically opens when you have to use an item on something. So overall, the buttons are simple. It works better with a mouse and keyboard, as the controller doesn't seem to work very well. Since there's so few buttons needed for the mouse and keyboard, you may as well use it anyway. Most of the puzzles are fairly simple to figure out and solve, even for people like Kaforna Forge, I'm sure. There's a couple
that...
There's no hope for Kaforna Forge. There's no hope
for me in puzzle
games. Zero. But there's a couple that get difficult, but only a couple. Most of the game, it comes to just finding the items you need to solve the puzzles, as they can be found anywhere in the house. So you just have to look really hard because you pass right over them time and time again. That was actually the harder part, just finding some of the items. But when you do, you'll be annoyed with yourself for not noticing them, even though you were staring right at them. The voice acting is great. There's even a guy who's constantly talking to you. He mostly berates you, but condescendingly, which gets really fucking annoying. All I wanted to do was bash his head in with a hammer, but that's kind of the point. However, when you finish puzzles and get further into the game, he does eventually give you valid information and even talks nice to you for completing some puzzles. He was a good character. He's somewhat complicated because he's meant to annoy you most of the time, but he's also very friendly to you as well. Be really friendly to you as well, so much as so that you want to bash his head in with a claw hammer as well, so that you don't.
Carnage
really
not only has trouble with puzzle games, he has trouble reading reviews. What is this?
Trouble reading words. What are these words? This advanced vocabulary that we're no. You don't outright hate them. The only real issue with the game is that you need a pretty hefty processor. There's also a typo in the review, I will add.
What? Are you going to tell me that Dark Mika had a typo? I don't
Dark
believe you.
Mika has a hefty. Apparently, she has a hefty processor, which is apparently more hefty than most. A newer i7 is needed to play this. And if you got the standard non-customer computer within the past year or two, you could probably play this any older, and I don't think you'd be able to, though. The reason for this is that most of the game loads all at once. The entire house, every room of it, is mostly loaded, and you'll have a few points where it loads more stuff, but the game stutters for like 2 seconds to load it all. That's the only reason I could come up with that it needs such a good processor. So
interesting.
Not big a deal there. Not too big a deal. But for $15, I actually think that's a pretty good price. You'll get between 4 to 8 hours of gameplay. Out of this, if you play it a single time with no guides or walkthroughs, it took me over about 5 hours, and you can beat this in under 2 if you know what you're doing, as there's an achievement for it. So if this comes to Xbox, you know Maka is gonna be there. Yeah,
so will you.
But your first playthrough will likely take around my time or longer because you have to find everything, and that's the real hard part. But for those who like puzzles, 100%, get this right now if your PC can handle it anyway. Everyone else, I suggest at least trying it because it's really fun.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, that is it. We made it through.
We survived.
We made it together.
Bad jokes. Nacho references.
Are you still alive?
For now, and blowing into his microphone. Oh, we made almost the whole show without that, Scott.
Oh, man. I had to be Darth Vader again.
You son of a bitch. Anyway, that is it for this episode. Scott, thanks for hanging out for the show. It's good having you on.
No problem.
I'm not saying thanks to him. He's a jackass.
Want to interrupt those last words?
Cole, I guess thanks for you being here, but Scott, do you want to object to that one as well?
Thanks for hooking me in to reading the reviews for that grappling hook.
Motherfucker.
Windlands.
I don't, that's how awesome I am. You can't object to me.
I don't think I say fuck you more than when Scott is on the show. But yeah, thanks to both of you for being here. Thanks again to Chris and Len for dropping by for those other reviews. That is it for this show. Going to play some fun music to wrap it up. Scott, give us some final words to end the show.
Puns are life.
No. No, not... That was awful. That was fucking awful.
That it wasn't even a pun either. I'm fucking tired.
I know. I mean, try it again.
That's what happens when you let old people do things.
Well, my final words, I'm going to have some soup.